This episode of Walsh Wednesday is brought to you by MHA of Dutchess County, Foam and Wash Car Wash, Juniors 2, the Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Day Rock, Lockset Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta, Dutchess Beer Distributors, Feldman, Kleiman, Collins & Sape, LLP, Attorneys at Law, and Walsh Valuation.
Let's stay curious, keep an open mind, and as always, I'm glad we get to spend some time. Welcome to Walsh Wednesday.
Hey there, and welcome back to Walsh Wednesday. As always, I'm Connor Walsh, coming to you from the MHA studios here in Poughkeepsie, and we got a great episode for you guys here today. Funny enough, Kent was the first one that we had here in this new space for Walsh Wednesday, so that's pretty ceremonial right there. We have him back. New chairs, new furniture, we're enjoying things. We have a new bookcase. We're going to have to start putting your books on these shelves because he doesn't have just one. He's got two now. Here to talk about his second book in the series, the Abyssborn God series, follow-up to Monsters Among Us. The new book is In the Wake of Gods. With us, we have Hudson Valley author Kent Priori. Kent, how are you, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Connor.
Absolutely. It's so good to have you back in here, man. And I'm so happy to see that things are going well. So May 5th was when this new book released. Tell us about this. So it's the second book. How excited are you about it?
Extremely. I'm very proud of it because the first book in the series took me 6 years to write. And going into the sequel, I was like, very nervous, like, how could I top it? And well, I'm pretty confident that I did. A lot of reviewers so far have said that it's even better than the first, and they love the first.
Nice.
So that's saying a lot. But it was also very nice because the main character of the first book, as we talked about in the prior episode, was dealing with bipolar disorder, and his life goes to shambles, and he has to piece everything back together and try to rise above his pain. But now, in the sequel, In the Wake of Gods, he's a father. And he has a daughter who is showing signs of similar problematic behavior. Mm. And so, as echoes of his past arrive to disrupt his newfound life he's built, he also has to worry that his daughter will be too much like him.
Mm.
There's going to be a lot of the same struggles that he dealt with in book one will re-arise in book two in fresh and interesting and horrifying ways.
Now, that's very interesting. You know, a parent worrying that their child is going to be like them or at least take on the worst traits of them. That's a universal feeling right there when it comes to parenthood. Holy cow. But in your book, you take it to the next level because, again, we're talking about gods, demons, monsters, and a lot more of like this fantasy element of it. Mm-hmm. So you're able to essentially visualize and embody the more mental aspects that people deal with on a day-to-day and kind of personify them in these creatures, right?
Yes. The monsters in the series are very much metaphorical. They're literal in the fact that they are fighting back against them, literally, but they are also symbolic for the monsters within, the mental health issues that any of the characters may be experiencing.
Yeah, absolutely. So, saying how this is the second book, you know, you were talking about the first one. Obviously, the first episode that we did together was mainly focusing on that. Do you just want to give us a little overview on the last book to set us up into where we're going with the second book now?
Yes. The first book begins, as I said in the last episode, I'm pretty sure, as like a demonic Truman Show. If you've seen that movie, most people have. If you haven't, go watch it. It's great. But the main character Seth is a 26-year-old man who his entire world thus far has been an orchestration of malevolent purposes, that demonic Truman Show. But once that reality shatters and he finds himself in the real world beyond, he has to combat monsters, both internal and external, as I've said, and this is all symbolic for piecing his life together after a tragedy involving his bipolar disorder, and he has to learn to overcome it, be stronger, and just learn to be the best version of himself. And he does that. Spoilers. Read the book.
But how he does that, check that out.
Yes, the how is always more interesting. But now he's a father, and like I said before, echoes of his past show up again. They resemble the enemy of the first book in some ways, but they are fresh and new. It's mainly a story of over conquering of conquering system of generational trauma, and the fact that life tends to circle back on itself, repeating in similar ways instead of moving forward in a straight line. Yeah. And we have to, and much of being our best selves requires that discipline of overcoming it again and again and again, and not letting it beat us down. And that was directly inspired by the fact that, again, the main character has bipolar disorder. This is a lifelong struggle that even when times of great high of elation and he's feeling great, the plunge is just around the corner.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's life. We're always going to have the hills and the valleys that happen through it all. And that's the thing about any kind of recovery. You know, here we are in the MHA studios. We're surrounded by mental health professionals. Each one of them will tell you that any kind of recovery, whether it's from a chronic illness or disorder, or if it's from substance use or whatever it is recovery is not a straight line.
No.
It is always going to weave back and forth, and we're going to be tested through our lives. See if we can use the lessons and the tools that we learned from previous incidences and see if we can actually use them later. Will we fall back into our old habits, or will we rise above them?
Yes.
And it sounds like this is what the second book is all about. He learned the lessons from the first. Now, can he live the lessons?
Live the lessons, not let it tear him down, and also try to raise his daughter up at the same time.
Yeah.
And don't let her do what he did.
So the fact that he's a parent now, how much of a time jump is it from book one to book two?
The beginning starts directly after the first book. And then in a quick succession over the series of part one, about 10 chapters or so, it jumps through from the daughter's infancy to her being 6 years old to 7, 8, 16. Each chapter is a section of their lives together up until the main character from The Monsters Among Us ends up being around 46.
46. Okay. Yeah. So roughly about 20 years there from difference. Okay. Very cool. But that's really cool to show the evolution of the character, not only from a mental standpoint, but literally talking about timeline and age right there. How impressive. So you said that things have been going pretty well with the book. The book came out on May 5th. I've seen online that you've been really grinding when it comes to the signings. You've been trying to get reviews out there. You've been sharing the reviews. They've been all coming out very positively. First of all, tell me about why do the signings in the first place? Why go out in to various stores, whether it's big chains like Barnes & Noble or small bookshops around the area? You know, to anybody who doesn't understand the business of being an author and how you need to promote things, why go out and do these signings in the first place?
It's a great opportunity to meet one-on-one with readers, really connect with them deeply. Like, I just had a signing at Barnes & Noble in Kingston a couple weeks ago to celebrate the new book. And there was one reader in particular I really connected with, and she bought both books. She was very enthusiastic about buying the books after learning about what they were about. And then she tracked me down, like, a week later on social media to tell me that she just cracked open my first book. She says my writing style is incredible. I posted about this. I'm not making this up. And that she cannot stop reading, doesn't want it to end. So it feels nice to have go from meeting in person, really bonding, and then having the follow up online to show that connection stayed with them. But along with that, it's from that's the individual signings. There's also the bigger signings where it's a group of authors. Maybe I did an event at Locust Grove in Poughkeepsie back in March, and there are bigger names than me. Sam Reverlein, who lives here locally in Poughkeepsie, actually.
Oh, really?
He's a great guy. I'm reading his book Edenville right now, and it's incredible. And he's just an incredible guy. Very fun and lovable. We connected, bonded, followed each other on social media, and that's from a professional standpoint, that's also very good for authors to make those kind of industry connections, because that is everything in this industry.
Yeah.
To know people. Yeah. But along with that, it's also where authors make the bulk of their money. Because otherwise, like, I make 25% royalties on these books. But if I'm buying from my publisher and bringing them myself to a signing, that's $8 I spend on the copies themselves, and then I make a larger chunk selling at the retail price. Mm. So that's also important, especially for people who like to support local. Go to these local signing events and buy books from local authors, because it will help them keep doing what we love to do.
Yeah, without a doubt. One thing that I find very interesting about the book industry today, I follow author Jason Pargin online. Pargin, I'm pretty sure. And one of the things that he's always talking about is how, like, you have to really push to pre-save, to do these signings, to get your face out there, because, like, unless you're a James Patterson of the world or something like that, it's very tough to get your book into the hands of people. Even the people who really love your work, they'll be like, oh, you have a new book out? Oh, that's cool. I didn't hear about it. You know, it's tough.
Yes.
Yeah. So what's that been like? Because writing the book is only part of the whole journey. You know, I've talked to so many artists, especially in the music industry. I was just talking to Ian Flanagan, who's around here. He was on The Voice. He's doing his big concert later for us for MHA. You know, he said, like, you know, 10% is recording the record. 90% of it is going to sell it.
Yes. The marketing is the worst part of the job.
Yes.
Because none of us expect it. And then we're just, most of our time goes to it after writing the book.
Yeah.
Yes. The events are set up like a year or so in advance most of the time. It's just a matter of doing it consistently and signing up for as many events as possible and really connecting with all the readers so they come back.
Yeah.
Because you're right. Like, a lot of family might act like they care, but then they don't buy the book, which has happened to me.
Yeah. And then there are just people who do care, but it's hard to keep up with everything as well.
Yeah. Yes. Reading, especially a novel, can be a time sink.
Or if they're not, like, chronically on social media, they don't see all the updates of when something's out either, which is very, very true. So, like, you have – that's why, as you said, the consistency of it. You got to make sure that it keeps going out, because something that you post one day might not be seen by X amount of people, but the next post will be, or they'll miss the next one. So, you know, stuff like that. It's a matter of – you know, we're all victims to the algorithm, unfortunately, in that regards. But doing stuff in person makes such a big difference, having that grassroots, the way that you're going about it, getting the signings, networking with people. It makes such a difference.
It does.
What have been – let me rephrase that. How do I want to say this? What are some of the lessons that you learned from promoting the first book that you're applying to promoting the second book now?
Oof. Hard one, but good one. I've noticed, anybody who has read The Monsters Among Us can attest to this, it is a very difficult book to categorize. Mm. When it comes to marketing, that makes it difficult. How can you tell people what it is if they really need to read it to know first? Yes, it's dark fantasy. Yes, it's horror, but it also feels like nothing else in those genres. It's very literary at its core, and it's kind of using those genres as a...
Launching off point.
So it's literary fiction in a disguise, mm-hmm. in a fantasy costume. So it's very difficult to sell. With the second book, I'm finding a new challenge. It's a sequel. Like, yes, it can be read on its own if somebody really wants to, but it's not recommended. You should definitely read the first one first so you have the full storyline. Otherwise, how are you going to know the full weight of what Seth is struggling to do when trying to raise his child? I'm kind of marketing them at the same time together as like a duology, because like they really need to be. I'm always struggling with marketing, and I'm trying to figure out that as I go. I am getting a little better every day, but it's not my forte.
But it's also the acceptance of the fact that, you know, it's like you can't get better, and we just got to keep going.
Well, 100%. I'm a lot better than I was a few years ago.
Yeah.
I was a mess on social media when I first started. So,
are we all?
Yeah.
I looked at the stuff that I was doing on social media to start, and I was like, oh, Connor, stop. Stop it. That's probably one of the cruelest things that social media has done, is like the rewind or the flashbacks. And and was like, I don't want to see this.
I don't need to know the past.
I don't need to see all this. But no. So that's great the way that things are going in person. Let's also talk about book reviews. You've been getting a number of really great reviews on the second book. But the reviews themselves, obviously, you know, as good as they are, that's fantastic. But also getting the amount of them. We're talking about algorithms before. You know, it's important if you like something, review it, give it a good review, because that's what helps push it out to further audiences online, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You just need that number on Amazon and Goodreads to go up and up and up and up, because otherwise people are not going to see it, exactly as you said. And it's hard to convince people to do that. Thankfully, on the business side of things, there is the beta reading period, where you send out an advanced reader copy to people months beforehand, and they read it, and they get the review out on release date. So that helps a little bit. But after that, I'll occasionally go to social media and be like, if you enjoyed my books, please review. And it's very important that you do, because then, again, just like showing up to our signings, it allows us to keep doing what we want to do and keep giving you great stories. But sometimes that can be very difficult. Sometimes I post that and nobody responds.
How do you deal with the moments when you feel like you're screaming out to a void?
Not well, because social media really does do that to you. Like I posted things that get hundreds of likes, and then the next day I post about my book and crickets. I don't understand why the algorithm works this way, but I'm just convinced it's out there to torture us.
I agree to a degree, yeah. Absolutely.
It's just being consistent. Some days are not going to be great. Some days are.
Yeah.
It's the same with anything. Same with sitting down to write. Some days I feel like I can write 2,000 words with ease. Some days it's a struggle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a matter of putting yourself in the situation to do it, you know. It's about that consistency. It's, you know, Wayne Gretzky, you miss all the shots you don't take.
Yes.
So just putting yourself in the game and making yourself available to even make the shot, that's always a huge leap as it is.
Yes.
That's big. So we were saying off camera how June is Men's Mental Health Awareness Month. And again, you know, these books are laced with mental health ideologies throughout it. I wanted to show you say to you this little fact that I found, and I'm curious if you're aware of it. Apparently, only 1 in 4 men read a work of fiction in a 12-month period. Why do you think that is?
That's a big question. Yeah. And I don't entirely know. I can just make guesses. But that is true. Most readers are women.
Yep.
I don't know what it is about that. Maybe it's the female tendency to... Maybe it's like... The fact that they are speech, language oriented, talking to babies from, you know, it's just maybe that's there's something there. I don't know, but also a lot of men aren't generally, you know, intellectually focused, centered, or oriented. They don't necessarily care.
We're definitely more visual creatures more than anything. So
yeah,
I know that's definitely made things harder. But when it comes to reading fiction, like take your book, why do you think men should read more fiction? What can they get out of it?
Well, for this, I can answer that with the same question of what they can get out of my books. Again, men don't read enough. Men tend to avoid their feelings. And when it comes to mental health, that's very dangerous. If you ignore what's going on inside you, it's just going to explode in unhealthy, poisonous ways.
Yeah.
This is a book about a guy with bipolar disorder who learns exactly that. He doesn't confront what he's going through, and it results in tragedy. So he has to, but then afterwards, he has the gift of hindsight, and he gets to try to put things back together and be healthier, be better. That's why men should read, to experience those kinds of narratives that otherwise in real life they're avoiding every day, that they don't want to touch upon emotion. Because they don't read books that show that considering and tackling your emotions head on is perfectly fine, healthy, and good. And yeah, so that's why men should start to read more.
And pause. We're going to take a quick break from our interviews to hear from our sponsors. First up, we got our friend Andrew O'Grady from MHA of Dutchess County.
When we talk about mental health, we often focus on the symptoms, anxiety, depression, isolation. But what we don't talk about nearly enough is the root cause. And more often than not, that root cause is trauma. This is Andrew O'Grady, CEO at Mental Health America of Dutchess County. Trauma doesn't always look dramatic. Sometimes it's quiet. Sometimes it's an experience you've carried alone for years. Sometimes you've never spoken about it because it feels shameful or because you were told to just move on. But here's the truth. Holding a painful secret doesn't protect you. It weighs on you. It shapes how you think, how you feel, and how you move through the world. It can impact relationships and jobs, the way you attach to people and interpersonal friendships and work relationships, and you don't have to keep carrying that weight by yourself. Healing is possible when you finally feel safe enough to talk about it. Contact a therapist today. If you need help with that process, contact your primary care physician or call MHA of Dutchess County. We're happy to help you find someone. It's time to take care of yourself. You just may have the best year of your life.
For 60 years, we here at Foam and Wash Car Wash pride ourselves on giving back to the community. Because we're your neighbors. It's our community too. In celebration of Foam and Wash's 60th anniversary, we want to say thank you. By visiting the link on screen and in the description, you'll receive one free Hot Wax and Shine car wash. No hassles, no gimmicks, just a token of our appreciation. Foam and Wash Car Wash, home of the Unlimited Wash membership. Thank you for being part of Foam and Wash Car Wash's story for the last 60 years.
This episode is also sponsored by Juniors 2. Come on out to Juniors 2 in Poughkeepsie, New York for Thursday Night Trivia, hosted by CMJW Entertainment. Play as a team as you work your way through four rounds of trivia categories in order to win gift certificates and other prizes. Juniors 2 Trivia Nights, every Thursday starting at 7 p.m. at 1126 Dutchess Turnpike, Poughkeepsie.
Next, we have a message from our friend Jeff Feldman from Feldman, Kleiman, Collins, and Sape LLP, attorneys at law.
Hi, I'm Jeff Feldman. In 1986, when Paul Kleiman and I started our practice, our goal was to create a law firm where you could meet with an attorney and feel confident that that attorney would be with you every step of the way. Today, the firm has been successfully trying cases at all levels of state and federal courts throughout the Hudson Valley and Capital District. We have been selected as one of the best personal injury and medical malpractice defense law firms by U.S. News and World Report every year since 2009. For all of those years, we were the only firm chosen in any litigation specialty between Albany and White Plains. Your case is important to us. Giving you the time and personal attention you deserve has always been the hallmark of success. Initial consultations are free of charge and always with an attorney.
In 1 year, I went from unemployed making videos in my family room to becoming a top 40 under 40 honoree, gaining hundreds of thousands of views. And I'm just getting started. It's time for the second annual Walsh Wednesday Fun Drive. It's Connor coming at you once again, and what better day to launch the second annual Fun Drive than to do it on National Connor's Day? Seriously, that's a thing, not some April Fool's prank. Guys, 2025 was such a transformative year here at Walsh Wednesday, and I'm so excited to see what 2026 has to offer. Over the span of the last 60 plus episodes, not only have we gotten to speak with local leaders and creators, but we worked with platinum selling artists, Broadway veterans, Hollywood actors, banana ball players, and even Olympians. Because of the hard work from this past year, Walsh Wednesday is once again nominated for Best Podcast, part of Hudson Valley Magazine's Best of Hudson Valley. None of this would be possible without you, so thank you. You can help Walsh Wednesday continue to grow by donating to our GoFundMe and by voting for Walsh Wednesday for Best Podcast. Both links can be found in the description of this episode. And if you don't have the funds to donate at this time, that's fine. I totally get it. Just sharing alone goes such a long way. We got some really cool plans for 2026. As you've seen, we've recently launched our trivia spinoff, Walsh Whiteboards, which honestly has been a blast to film. Not just that, we're hoping to go on the road more often to show you incredible sights, stories, exhibits, and more that can't be captured in the studio. From the bottom of my heart, I greatly appreciate you for believing in what Walsh Wednesday is and what it will become. Connor Walsh signing off for Walsh Wednesday on National Connor's Day. And as always, I'm glad we get to spend some time. Thanks for listening, guys. It's time to get back to the show and play.
Yeah, I agree. You know, reading, I was not a huge reader when I was younger. I was a very slow reader. I struggled to do so. I didn't like sitting still. You know, I've dealt with anxiety for a good chunk of my life. And that's one of the reasons why I can't sit still. I'm always wanting to go from one thing to another. But when I was able to find books that really spoke to me, resonated with me, and I found like myself willing to get back into reading. I love reading now, and honestly, it has saved me in so many different ways. Obviously, you are writing, but how do you feel that reading other works has saved you?
Oh, I mean, it absolutely has. Reading The Bell Jar by Sylvia Plath, where she goes through something similar to what Seth and the Monsters Among Us goes through, a depressive spiral that ends in a tragedy. Getting to see my, being seen in a book, that is not something I ever had when I was growing up, depressed and anxious and had a family who didn't understand and didn't, quite frankly, didn't care to address what I was feeling. I didn't have friends I could talk to. I didn't have anything. But to find myself in a story, wow, someone else knows what I'm going through. That helps immensely, just to know that. It helps you feel less alone. Again, another reason men should be read more. Yeah. It's nice, especially, you know, there's the male loneliness epidemic or whatever.
Yeah.
People read some books. It will help.
Absolutely. No. I've read things from fiction to nonfiction, anywhere in between when it comes to genres, and it's fascinating the different stories and the different lessons that you can get out of it, and the certain moments where you pick up a book, especially like yours, and you read it, and it's like, holy shoot, I see a lot of myself in this, or I see a lot of a family member in this, or, you know, helps you understand yourself or understand the people in your life around you, which is huge.
Yes.
Huge. Obviously, we're here to primarily focus on this, but something that you told me when you came in, you got another book deal in the works, and it's separate from this series. It's going to be something different. You want to talk to us about
that? Yes. It's called Birds of a Feather. It's a comedic horror novel set here in the Hudson Valley.
Ooh, okay.
And greatly inspired by a very bizarre situation myself experienced while at Bard College, which involved, I accidentally hit a duck with my car.
Oh,
it was very sad. Didn't like that at all. But I was on my way to my Latin class at Bard. I couldn't stop. I just had to keep going to campus. I felt guilty, but you know, people hit animals all the time. It's horrible. But the next day I get a text from my apartment super, hey, there's a pigeon in your car, FYI. And I'm just like, what? It was like 7 in the morning. I hadn't had coffee yet. I didn't know what to make of that. So I went out and checked my car, my bumper, and inside was the duck, alive, and just waddling around and making a mess of things. And I was like, I don't know what to do with this. I have to get to class. So I take a picture. And when I'm in class, my professor walked in and was like, so how's everybody's day going? Just a nonchalant question he asked every day. Nobody ever answered. And I was like, mine's been weird. And they're like, why? I'm like, there's a duck stuck in my bumper. And they repeated, there's a duck stuck in your bumper? I'm like, yes, there's a duck stuck in my bumper. And I passed around the photo, and they're like, there's a duck stuck in your bumper.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, yeah, I don't know what to do about that.
Oh, my gosh.
And eventually, a neighbor helped me break it out and at the cost of my bumper. And then also, the car broke down 3 months later, unrelated, but as a joke.
The timing.
I was like, oh, so the duck must have been a local deity that placed a curse on my car.
And I was like, curse of the duck.
I know. And then
curse
after
of the mallard.
And I was like, that's a novel. So, yes, there's a very funny, very outlandish, absurd, dark humor novel coming based on that real story. And it will be within 2 years. It's going to be a while, but it's something to look forward to. I have these two books. I have the next sequel, The Hollow King, coming August 2027, next year, and a fourth and final book coming as well that I'm working on currently. So there's three books in the works at this very moment for everyone to look forward to.
Busy. But I think that just goes to show when creators such as yourself is working on stuff like this. You know, when we had you in for the first episode that we had you here on Walsh Wednesday, you were in the midst of getting things ready for the launch of this. Mm-hmm. You're writing the other ones, but here you are trying to focus on the first. Like, all these things swimming in your head. As any kind of creative, any kind of entrepreneur, there's so many irons in the fire. For anybody who's trying to get into something like this or feels overwhelmed by the process, is there anything that you've learned through your process that you'd like to share that may help somebody who's listening to this?
Again, it comes down to discipline. I keep a planner. I write on every day, and I don't check it off until I write, and I keep everything very organized, because otherwise I could never keep all of this in my head. You're right. I was pushing the first book, I was working on this, and now I'm doing the same with the third book and all these other books, and writing the fourth and final book and making sure that ties everything together perfectly. It's a lot of stress. And then I'm also, come this fall, I'll be researching for the next book I write. Mm-hmm. It never ends. So keep a planner, stay diligent, and, you know, practice discipline.
Yeah.
Because art might be all passion and you know, explosive creative energy when you're creating the book, but there's everything else to consider too. The setting up for the next piece, the marketing, the keeping track of how many publishers I've sent to and who mm-hmm. I still need to send to. Any aspiring writer would do well to practice discipline.
Absolutely. You said there a second ago, it never ends. My follow-up question is that, would you ever want it to end?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
I love writing. There might be come a time where I have to shift my priorities and find a full-time editing position somewhere just to pay, because life is expensive. But I will never stop writing. I don't think there's a version of me that could exist without writing.
Mm-hmm.
It's therapeutic. It's a way of expressing myself that I otherwise can't do. And so no, I could never stop.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, I want to get personal for a second. Something that we talked about the last time that you were in here was how you dedicate a lot of what you did with the first book to Jacob.
I did.
Jacob Lang, love him. A friend of ours who passed away far too young a couple of years ago. We're recording this in May. Obviously, this is going to come out a couple of weeks later. And, you know, we'll be getting close to, you know, his birthday and whatnot. So for when this releases, as I said, close to his birthday, how has, obviously Jacob was a big part of getting the first book off the ground for you. What hints of Jacob do you feel are a part of the second one?
Quite a big hint, actually. There's a beloved character from the first book who, along with the other two main characters, continue on into the second book. And part one, that gradual, like, going through the sections of the daughter's life, like I mentioned before, end with her, with that beloved character, her uncle, her in name only, her uncle, unfortunately, passing. In a way that, if you read it, you'll see some similarities in what happened with Jacob.
Yeah. Do you feel like that writing was a way to help process it for you?
100%. I went into writing that scene with that in mind. I wanted to capture all the horrible feelings that I felt upon hearing about what happened, and all the angst and sorrow I felt in the years following. I channel all of that in order to make that scene as impactful as possible, and also to cleanse myself a little bit.
Yeah. We talk about how these books are going to help a lot of people, a lot of readers, when it comes to loneliness and battling their own demons. How do you feel like these books will help with loss? Because obviously it's helping you get through your loss, but how do you think the books will help other people get through theirs?
Well, that's a large part of book two. That character dying is a big trigger for the daughter and why she goes down a bad road at first. And the main character from The Monsters Among Us, Seth, has to be a good father and try to lead her back onto the correct path. And that's very difficult for a parent when your child doesn't think you understand what they're going through.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm trying to say is that in order to overcome loss, you need loved ones around you to help you through it.
Yeah.
For me, that was my fiance, Katarina, who's in the room with us right now.
Yep, behind the camera.
She helped me survive Jacob's loss.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for her, I might not have.
Yeah.
So it really is about that. Don't push away your loved ones, because you will need them when that happens, when we all inevitably experience grief and loss.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying there with it. And, you know, I've told you before, Jacob's passing was the main reason why I went into therapy, and you know, I needed it at the time, and it's something that continues to help me. And you know, this discussion reminds me of the famous quote from WandaVision, that Vision says, "What is grief but love persevering?"
Yeah.
And I think that's very succinct. You know, it's how we decide to use that love, the love that we have for the person who is moved on, and the love that we decide to embrace for the people who are still around us, and the love that we allow back into our lives when we feel like, after a loss, can we accept that love?
Yeah.
It's such a heavy thing. It is such a heavy thing. One thing's for sure. I know Jacob would be proud. I'm proud. I know, you know, Katarina is very proud. Dan just met you, but I'm sure he's proud. I'm throwing Dan under the bus right now. But no, this is all terrific stuff. We're getting to the end of this episode, but you know, with all the different projects that you have going on and trying to keep them balanced and but enjoying the process nonetheless, you know, what do you feel keeps you so passionate on a day-to-day basis?
I adore these characters. They've been sitting with me for 10 years now. By the time the fourth book is finished and published, probably 12, 13. It was The Monsters Among Us was my first book. I spent 6 years on it, and when you do that, when you spend 6 years on an artistic endeavor, it really sticks with you forever. It brands you. It sears into your mind. There's a reason why this book exists in the first place. I finished this, and the characters were all but whispering to me, "We're not done yet. There's more story to tell." And that has kept me passionate. I care so much about the characters and the story that I can't bring myself to ever stop.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it will end with book four, but that's, you know what I mean.
Yeah, but you'll continue your literary journey beyond that point.
Yes, in service of these characters I adore so much. And outside of literature, again, my fiance helps with that too. Keeps me passionate about love and doing the right thing, imbuing good social messages into my writing.
Absolutely.
To help people.
I love it. Kent, before we completely wrap this up, is there any last little nugget you would like to share with the Walsh Wednesday listening audience?
Any lesson?
Yeah, any lesson, nugget, something we talked about, something we haven't talked about. Any last little nugget you want to leave them with?
On brand for these books, no matter how dark life gets, no matter how heavy, no matter how hopeless it feels, like when we lost Jacob, it felt like there were times when I wondered if I could ever actually move on from the grief,
yeah,
ever do live happily again. The answer is yes. This character in The Monsters Among Us goes through horrible tragedy, led down the path of misery through with his bipolar disorder. It was not an easy road for him to overcome that and build something good on the foundation of all that misery.
Yeah.
And my lesson to tie into that is, don't be afraid of sorrow and darkness and sadness. It is don't label it as something bad to turn your gaze away from. Accept pain as it comes. Let it wash through you. Let it do what it's going to do. And what it's going to do is teach you a lesson. It's going to help you grow and become better and stronger and more capable of dealing with loss and hardship after the fact. There's room in the world for good and evil, bad and good. You should accept it all as it comes.
Yeah. Beautifully said. Beautifully said. So, again, make sure that you check out the new book, In the Wake of Gods, out now. If you haven't started the series, start with the first, then get it with the second. We'll have all the links in the description of this episode so you can follow along on this journey. Really exciting to see, and make sure that you're following along. Leave those reviews. Say hi at book signings where you can say hi and interact personally yourself. You know, conversations like these are the things that keep me going. These are the things that keep me alive and passionate. Kent, thank you so much for being here and supporting, as always. I'm excited about the second book.
Thank you.
Very, very good.
Thank you.
I'm Connor.
I'm Kent.
And as always, we're glad we get to
spend some time.
And that's a wrap on this week's episode. Much love to our sponsors this week, MHA of Dutchess County, Foaman Wash Car Wash, Juniors 2, Council on Addiction Prevention and Education of Dutchess County Incorporated, Dayrock,
Locksat Rock Hair Design, A Touch of Naples Pizza and Pasta,
Dutchess Beer Distributors,
Feldman Kleiman Collins and Sape LLP, Attorneys at Law, and Walsh Valuation. Thank you to our Walsh Wednesday All-Stars, all of those who have generously contributed to the Walsh Wednesday 2025 Fund Drive. You can see the list of names on screen or in the description of this episode. And of course, thank you to our Walsh Wednesday Warriors, Jim Robinson, John Newhall, Meg Boyce, and Jenna Hess. These individuals have pledged $100 or more to Walsh Wednesday for 2025, either through the GoFundMe or our Patreon.